Welcome to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph, as she explores the ever-changing music industry with today's top creatives, artists, and executives. Enjoy these fun and informative conversations with a little bit of love thrown in along the way.
Welcome to For Love and Music with me, Tara Joseph. Now, today's guest is without doubt one of the most talented individuals I've ever had on the show. With 7 Grammy nominations to his name, having scored countless movies and TV shows, and created over 2,000 orchestral and big band arrangements for artists including Michael Bublé, Aretha Franklin, Paul McCartney, Streisand, this man really is a humongous talent. So let's welcome to the show the fabulous Chris Walden. Chris, hi. How are you?
Good. Hi, Tara. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
It's an honor for me. It's an honor for me. So tell me, I like to ask everyone the first question, where are you right now?
I'm in my writing room, my composing room in the Capitol Records Tower.
Well, I haven't had that answer before. How long have you worked out of the Capitol building, and what an iconic piece of architecture that is?
Absolutely. I've been here 5 years, I think, now. Yes. And I've always had the writing room in a recording studio. I don't like to work at home. I need to be away, even though I work by myself and I don't have any assistants or any staff and I'm self-employed, but I need to go somewhere to work and be creative. I can't really work out of my house. And especially when the kids were younger, it was really difficult. I've always had a writing room where I would go in the morning, 9 o'clock, and come back at 7 o'clock in the evening. And I do this 6 days a week religiously, and I go to work in my little room and I'm just by myself in my room. But it's nice to be in an environment where other music creators are and where recording sessions are happening. And I ended up here at Capitol because most of my recording sessions happen here at Capitol Studios anyway. So it was convenient to just rent a room here as well.
And it must have been slightly less busy though over the past few months within the building, because of lockdown and COVID, and it must have been a very different vibe for you to enter into every day.
Absolutely. And I mean, as a matter of fact, in March, actually, they did close the building for 6 months. And the record company offices are in the building as well. And they were all sent home and they closed the studio. So I was actually, for the first time in decades, was working out of my home for 6 months.
And how was that?
I mean, now that the kids are older, but it's still challenging because at home, I don't really have a room to myself. I had my little setup on the piano in the living room, and it was in the middle of family life. It was challenging to work at home. So I'm glad to be back here at Capitol. They opened the building about 2 months ago. The offices are still closed. They just opened the studios and my room here on the second floor where the mastering rooms are as well. And I'm pretty much the only one in the building. They keep the building open at the moment for me. Sporadically, there are sessions happening downstairs in the studios, but not very much.
Well, I have to share with the listeners that behind Chris is a wall full of the most incredible gold and platinum discs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who are some of those artists behind you?
That is, I have to look myself. Josh Groban, Barbara Streisand, 2 Diana Krall's, Rod Stewart, and Mary J. Blige.
So no one very important then, right?
John Legend.
Just sort of media, sort of new artists, yeah. Right? I mean, seriously, yeah, well, though. I mean, you have worked with some of the most incredible artists there have ever been. I mean, it must be when you walk into the room and you've got sort of Barbara Streisand sitting there or Bocelli sitting there. It's like, that must be quite a moment, even if you've done it multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, there is a part of it that never gets old. I mean, especially if I get to work with an artist that I have admired for years and then I get to meet them and work with them, it's something special. But on the other hand, on some projects, I don't always get to meet the artist. I mean, in some cases, I get to meet the artist and work closely with the artist. That always depends on who the producer is. But there are producers who are very hands-on themselves, or musicians like David Foster. Whenever I work with David Foster, there are cases where I don't even get to meet the artist. And that's fine, too. And then I write the arrangements and David takes care of the recording and everything. So there are both scenarios where I do get to meet the artist, work closely with them. And then on some, I don't even get to meet the artist.
So go on then. Tell us some of the ones that you've met that you just adore working with.
Well, I've worked a lot with Diana Krall, not only on records, but I've also been on tour as a conductor on orchestra tours with Diana. And Diana is definitely someone who musically I very much respect and get along with. But also personally, we established a relationship over the years. We've been working together now for almost 20 years. That is something special. And yeah, I have artists that I work with again and again, like Michael Bublé, for example, or Josh Groban, are people that come back to work with me and that I appreciate very much. And those are special moments. But I think the most memorable moment working actually was with Paul McCartney. I only did one album with Paul McCartney, but there was something really special working with him.
I'm sure. Well, he's, you know, one of the greatest legends of all time, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I mean, I do get to work a lot with known artists, and not it gets dull or anything, but it's sort of becomes routine. But with Paul, it was something. He's above everyone else in terms of his stature and as a legend. And even there, I had to pinch myself. I'm actually sitting next to Paul McCartney on the piano and we're working out a
Incredible.
Song together.
Well, just going back to a comment you made earlier about, I think that you said you'd worked with Diana Krall for like over 20 years. And having a 20-year long relationship in this crazy world of the music industry that we inhabit, that's quite something, because relationships don't often last that long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really special when you have that bond and it's been there for many, many years.
Yeah, yeah.
But take us back then. Take us back to the beginning, to your childhood and how this all began. Go on. I'm all ears.
Okay, so I was born in 1966 in Hamburg, Germany, and my mother is a classical choir singer and specializing in early Baroque and Renaissance music. And from an early age, I remember musicians coming to our house with historic instruments, unpacking them for the rehearsal that were happening in our apartment in Hamburg. And as young as 3-4 years old, I was fascinated with these instruments that these musicians were unpacking at home. And I asked them if I can try them out. So I was fascinated with all kinds of instruments, with playing music from that early age. And my parents encouraged that and taught me in music. And I think I was able to read and write music before I was able to read letters and write. So, and then I had lessons in playing recorder flute.
Me
and then
too.
As every kid, so like early childhood music education.
Yeah.
Then I learned piano lessons beginning age 7. And at some point I kind of rebelled against my mother's aesthetic of music, which was only early Baroque and Renaissance music. And as my form of rebellion was becoming interested in jazz. And not that my mother had anything against jazz, it's just it was a kind of music that she didn't know anything about. And that was a domain that I could have to myself. And so I started learning trumpet at age 13 and started playing in high school big band, and we became really passionate about jazz. And then at age 12 or 13, I also started writing down my little compositions and writing music. And then in high school big band, our teacher who led the high school big band, he wrote the arrangements for the big band himself, and they weren't really good. And I called him out on it and said, we would love to play some better arrangements. Your arrangements are not really good. And this teacher was really smart. He said, if you think you can do it better, try. And I did. And I did
Amazing.
A takedown of a Count Basie chart, because I think it was 15, 16 years old. Because we didn't really have stock arrangements available to buy at that time in Germany for big band arrangements. So I just started doing takedowns and brought them to the rehearsal with high school big band. And the teacher said, that's really good. From now on, you'll do all the arrangements.
Wow.
And so that started my arranging career. And by the time I was graduating from high school, I was already making a living playing in wedding bands on the weekends. And then I moved to Cologne after we had still the draft in Germany. So after I was done with the service, I moved to Cologne and went to music school, to the music conservatory. I majored in composition, minor conducting, but I was the only one in my class who was already making a living as an arranger for radio big bands, because back then in Germany, which was by then the mid-80s, every major German city had its fully employed radio big band, and they needed arrangements every day because they were rehearsing and recording every day. And I, at the age of 19, I became a staff arranger for the Hamburg radio big band. And then that led to arranging assignments with the radio symphony orchestras in my early 20s. And yeah.
So how did you go from Germany to LA? How did that happen?
So then all throughout my 20s, up until I was 29, I was writing arrangements for all these radio big bands in Germany and radio symphony orchestras. And then I was also writing arrangements for record dates, for recording artists, for German recording artists. And one of these recording artists, I was a singer-songwriter, and he at one point got commissioned to write a film score. But he wasn't really a film composer. So he hired me and someone else to help him orchestrate and arrange this film score. And we all didn't know anything about film music. And so we did this film, and I learned with this film how not to score a film. So I learned from these mistakes others were doing. And this film became really successful. It was nominated for an Oscar in 1991. It was a story about scandal about the fake Hitler diaries. It was a comedy.
What was it called?
It was called Stonk.
Okay.
And that film kind of propelled me into my film composing career in Germany. And because the producers of that film saw who actually did the work and hired me for the next film instead of that singer-songwriter, which terminated my relationship with that singer-songwriter, but it was okay. I was now scoring films in Germany. And I did that for all throughout my 20s, and I was scoring television and films up until I was 29. And then I just sort of discovered that I had accomplished everything there is to accomplish in Germany, and I wanted to learn more and have opportunities to broaden my musical horizon. Because at the time, then by now the mid-90s in Germany, directors and producers wanted minimalistic music because the budgets were also small, but also they wanted music that doesn't show too much emotion because Germans have problems with showing emotions anyway. And I wanted to write lush, emotional, big orchestral music for films. And I felt I didn't have that opportunity in Germany because that kind of music that I wanted to write was not really asked for in Germany. So I decided to go to a place where this kind of music that I wanted to write is in demand and is asked for, which was Hollywood. So I asked my back then girlfriend, we had been dating for a year, if she would move with me to Los Angeles. And she said, yes, she would do that. And so the two of us, we moved to Los Angeles in 1996.
And you haven't looked back, then, really, have you?
and she's now my wife, and we have two kids. And so once I got to LA, it didn't start right away. I thought it would take 4 or 5 years to get into the business. And in the first year, it looked like everything was going smoothly. I had only one contact. I knew one television movie producer who I was referred to by a friend who gave me the opportunity to score two television movies in my first year when I came to Hollywood, one for ABC and one for CBS. That was when the major network still had their Sunday night network movie. But then along came reality television, and all the networks went away with producing Sunday night network movies. And this producer that I had just worked done two movies for, he quit the business. And since that was my only contact, suddenly I had no work. I just had gotten to LA like a year before, a kid on the way and just married. And I did not earn a single American dollar for the next 4 years. So luckily, I still had some work from Germany. I was still scoring a television series in Germany. They were sending me the tapes to Los Angeles. I would write and score the music in Los Angeles and send them back on timecode dad. So that kept us afloat for the next 4 years. And what really broke the ice or kind of gave me a little breakthrough is with the musicians that would come to me after recording sessions for these German projects, which I recorded in Los Angeles. But these musicians would come to me and say, hey, really love the music that you write. And first I thought they're just saying that to schmooze me. But they said, no, we really mean it. We would love to play the music that you write just for yourself. And I said, well, how do we do this? And the musician said, well, we have rehearsal rooms here at the Musicians Union in Hollywood. Why don't we get together once a month and you bring some of your charts that you just experiment with and we play them down? So this is how my big band started, as a just a rehearsal big band at the Musicians Union. And we did that for 2 years. And then we had enough repertoire. Then I said, hey, let's play a gig. So we played a gig at a jazz club in Los Angeles. And then a little bit later, I had a little bit of a windfall because of the television series in Germany was picked up for something like here syndication. So it was in a daily rerun that gave me some royalties. And instead of buying a bigger house or anything, I invested that money into recording an album with my own big band. And this is money I obviously, if you're investing money into a jazz album, this is never money that you'll never see back again. But I did it as a passion project. But that album got nominated for 2 Grammys. And suddenly people were speaking about it. And David Foster kind of took notice of me. He came to a gig once and asked me during the break if I had ever written for strings. And I said, yes, I've written for strings. And then he said, come to my office tomorrow, to my studio. I'll have some work for you. So then step by step and little by little, one thing led to another.
I love hearing the journeys that people have been on to get them to the places that they are, you know, in their lives today. It's fascinating because everyone's story is a little different.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone's story is really different.
Yeah. But one thing actually that has sort of aligned a number of the different guests that I've had onto the show, which is a coincidence because the show is called For Love and Music, is that mm-hmm. love and music have come together in important ways. They've sort of collided to, you know, get people to Los Angeles or, do you see what I mean? Because I came to LA for love and music, hence the title of the podcast. You came here with love and music, and so many of my other guests have as well. It's sort of like bizarre that so many people have that in common.
That is true.
Right?
Yeah. That's the common thread. Yeah. And it's interesting to hear from you how you observe that. Yes.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. So as I've said earlier, you know, you've worked with some incredible, incredible performers, but you've also, you know, for example, you do all of the music, all of the arranging for the Academy Awards, for the Oscars.
Yes.
Which must be mm-hmm. so much fun. How many years have
it
you
is.
Done
that? I've been the so-called lead arranger for the last 2 years, but I've worked on the Oscars for the last 7 or 8 years as one of the arrangers. And again, I'm not doing this all by myself. This is too much music for one person to write. So I'm, as the lead arranger, I write the majority of the music in the corner pieces of the show. But I have a team of 8 or 9 arrangers every year to work with me on that show. It's a lot of music to write.
So for the viewers listening, Chris kindly sent me some footage of a number of the different performers that he's worked with. And it's quite sort of mind-boggling. It really is. Because, I mean, we sort of go from Barbara Streisand to Ariana Grande to Rod Stewart to Aretha Franklin, Christina Aguilera, Josh Groban. I mean, it's like, who haven't you worked with that you would love to work with?
That's a good question. But, I mean, there's still a lot of people that I haven't worked with that I would love to work with. And then not necessarily all really famous people, but I mean, for instance, there's one musician I admired for a long time. I never had opportunity to meet or even work with him, which is Pat Metheny. I really would love to work with Pat Metheny once. He's a fabulous jazz guitarist and I just love his music and I would love to collaborate with him.
Well, Pat, if
it ever occurs, I don't know.
If you're listening, Pat, I can put you in touch with the man himself, with Chris. I'm sure he's listening. I reckon you'll get a call when this comes out.
Yeah.
So now you were saying about your big band and you weren't Grammy nominated. Is that for Home of My Heart?
Yes, that was the album that got 2 Grammy nominations. My first one, yes.
Okay, and that's basically what opened so many doors, obviously.
Yes, it did. There was not one single incident that kind of opened all the doors. In my career, there were like smaller breaks that always opened a door somewhere and succession of various little breaks that led to where I am today. Another one I think was, and actually having my own big band presented me with a few opportunities like this or led to a few events that kind of gave me little breakthroughs here and there. And another one that also had to do with my big band was when I was doing my own big band albums, I always chose to not to do it on the cheap side, even though I would never see the return directly. Even those albums, I always decided to do with the best resources I can do with in a good studio with Al Schmidt as a recording engineer to get the best result. I didn't want to do it on the cheap side. And I was mixing one of my later big band albums here at Capitol Studios downstairs with Al Schmidt. And Al Schmidt likes to have the door, the studio door open and the music bleeds into the hallway. And we were mixing one day. And suddenly someone walking down the hallway hears the music and pokes his head into our studio. And obviously he recognizes Al and said, Al, that's great music. Who wrote that? And Al points to me sitting behind Al and said, yeah, Chris Walden wrote that. This is Chris Walden. And that person just turned to me and said, hey, do you want to work for American Idol? I said, yeah, sure. And I said, okay, I'll call you tomorrow. That was Ricky Minor.
Wow.
And that would not have happened if I would have taken my big band to some small studio that is cheaper, but where I'm not exposed or which is not frequented by people of that caliber.
Yeah.
So if
makes sense to invest in your future, basically.
Exactly.
Which is what you did.
Invest in your career was always something I always strongly believed in.
That's actually good advice for any youngsters that might be listening in. Because I always like to ask, what advice would you give to people who would like to be in your shoes, basically? And that's a very important point.
Yes, that's one of the main advice I always give to students and people who ask me is invest in your career. And if you're recording your own music, do it at a place where it's more likely you get to interact with other people that might be helpful for your career. And actually, my friend Hans Zimmer put it very eloquently, even in his world where he works a lot with synthesizers. He said, a house will never buy you a synthesizer, but a synthesizer will eventually buy your house.
I love that. And it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Makes total sense.
So if you have some spare money, don't spend it on, I don't know, something, a fancy car, a house. Spend it on something for your career, invest it into equipment or whatever, recording. Eventually, we'll get you that car or house.
Now, are your children musical? Is your wife musical?
My wife is a violinist.
Okay.
Actually how we met. We met at a recording studio in Cologne in Germany at that time. My kids are musical, but they did not choose music as their career path.
Okay.
I have to differentiate that. My daughter went to a liberal arts college where music was part of her curriculum, but did not end up becoming a profession. And my son, actually, he's very musical and also did music programming and still on the side programs beats and stuff. But he went to business school, but he now works full-time for a music management company.
And I know who he works for, the wonderful Bob Murray.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and when Bob Murray kind of expanded his company, my son was the first one he hired. And he's now operations manager for Bob.
That's great.
I'm very proud of him. Yes.
That's so great. I have to say, I don't know how old your son is, but you look incredibly young to have grown-up children.
Thank you.
You really
My son is 23. My son is 23.
You look so young.
Thank you. As I said, I'm born 66.
Well, you look a lot younger than your age.
Thank you.
So what do you like to do when you're not being a musical genius?
I like to hang out with my family, and especially these past few months with the lockdown, which was the blessing and the curse. And the blessing part of it is that we really got a lot of time with the family and having dinner every night together. And I really like to cook.
What's your speciality?
I like cooking French and Italian food. I do homemade gnocchi with the bolognese sauce. So that's the kids really like that too. So my wife is not really enthusiastic about cooking. She sort of does it if no one else is, but I really enjoy cooking. So she leaves that usually to me.
Well, men can make amazing chefs.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the best cooks in the world are men.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to try at some point your homemade gnocchi. The closest I get to gnocchi is frozen from Trader Joe's.
No, once we're allowed again, we'll have you over.
Yeah, I'm inviting myself over. I hope you realize that.
Yes. I'll make some homemade gnocchi.
So what's next for you? What have you been working on during lockdown? What can we expect to hear, see? What's next for Chris Walden?
Yeah, so during the lockdown, obviously I had a lot less work than usually around that time of year. The last big thing was after the Oscars, which was the last big show I did earlier this year. The lockdown started. And usually in the spring, I'm writing arrangements for the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra for the summer concert seasons, as well as the Boston Pops. And obviously all that fell through. So I started doing some online teaching. I did some Zoom masterclasses about arranging for big band and orchestra. And that was actually quite a success. I had a lot of people sign up for it. And it also gave me a purpose. It was a lot of fun for me doing it. And then in the summer, there was slowly, but recording was coming back. I did an album with my dear friend Greg Field, who was producing it, an album.
Love Greg.
Which was a Christmas album with a British singer called Jonathan Antoine.
Who's been on the show?
Oh, yes, Jonathan.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, he's been on the show. Love chatting to Jonathan.
Yeah. So we did that album with him, which comes out December, I think, in a few weeks. I did an arrangement for Josh Groban for his new album. The album is called Harmony, which is coming out, I think, just before Thanksgiving. And...
Well, it sounds pretty busy to me.
Yeah. And I've been working on a few of my own projects, which will come out next year.
Oh, excellent. Well, listen, Chris, honestly, it's been such a joy to speak to you. It really has. And, you know, I'm a huge fan, admirer of your work. You're so incredibly talented. Seriously, a real inspiration.
Thanks.
So thank you. Thanks for coming onto the show.
Well, thanks for having me. And I'll be doing gnocchi when you come over to the house.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Yes.
So to all of our fabulous For Love and Music listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stay safe and healthy, and you'll be hearing from me again soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph. For more information, you can check out at For Love and Music Official on Instagram, at For Love and Music Official on Facebook, and also visit www.jamartistgroup.com/podcast.